So I was telling you a couple of reasons why the saintly persons, sadhus, are not allowed to freely mix with non-devotee materialistic householders. One reason I told you was that they may get infected. They may get infected by one thing. The first thing we said was they may become allured by the, you know, facilities, opulences and comforts and luxuries of family life, and they may give up their renunciation due to their weakness of heart. Second thing I said was they may get infected by them, and when they come back to their own place, the infection may continue, increasing their disease, and eventually they may fall down to Maya over a period of time. There is a possibility. So that is why the, and also Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the episode of Chota Haridas, Mahaprabhu, when he returned, when the rice was served, he ate the rice and said, "Oh, this is very delicious. It's very nice." He appreciated the rice. But then as he continued eating, he asked, "Who brought it?" Then he said that, the devotee said that Chota Haridas had collected it from Madhavi Das, you know, Dasi. The Madhavi Mataji, she is also counted as, she is Shikimaiti's sister, and she is one of the associates of Lord Chaitanya. But she is given only a half the position out of the 3.5 associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. She is given the half. Why half? Because the intimate associates of Mahaprabhu are those who know many confidentialities about Mahaprabhu, which means she is also one of them. But being in a woman's body, she is given half role because there are certain restrictions for a woman in associating with sannyasi or guru or saintly persons. That physical vicinity is not permitted. So because of that, which means she is certainly a very exalted lady. But Chota Haridas, when he collected the rice, there some transaction happened which was improper in terms of glance, so which Mahaprabhu detected when he ate the rice, and then he banished him to teach his followers a very serious lesson. So in this way, the Vedic life teaches that the brahmachari or a sannyasi living in an ashramite life, one of the associations they get is when they go home to home, "Bhavati bhikshan dehi," please give bhiksha. Then the lady would come out of the house and give bhiksha and go inside, that's all. Then the brahmachari keeps going house to house, madhukari, doing madhukari. So that is not even the time involved for the milking of a cow, less than that. How much time will it take for you to just collect the alms and go? But in case a saintly person feels, "I have something valuable to share with them," that should be a message of enlightenment with the grihasthas. So for in order to do this, the brahmacharis and sannyasis should be sober in their behavior. Being sober, being, you know the word sober? Sober is opposite to frivolous. They can't be frivolous. For example, it is said the grihasthas are like parents to the brahmacharis and sannyasis. Brahmacharis and sannyasis are like children to the grihasthas. Yes, it is. Why is it said so? Because the grihasthas maintain the renounced order by giving charity, by maintaining the ashram. And the brahmacharis and sannyasis, they in turn share their enlightenment with the grihasthas as well as the rest of the society, which is actually God's work, and also it benefits the society. They are supposed to do. But although the grihasthas are called parents for the brahmacharis cannot be frivolous. If a brahmachari crosses the Lakshman Rekha and says, "Mataji, Mataji, I will teach you how to make halwa in the kitchen. Mataji, I will teach you how to play kartal." Like this, some places people have gone beyond their limits, and not only they have fallen down, they have created disgrace to the grihastha families also. So in this way, they may be, they are called parents, but at the same time one should know how should one associate. In the same manner, those who are unsheltered women, unsheltered women means like sometimes a woman who is unmarried or a widow or a divorced lady. So this kind of woman associating with the saintly person is condemned, because that will pollute the saintly order and the saint will not be able to do his job for which he has taken the order of the saintliness, isn't it? So there is a restriction put between man-woman meeting. Nowadays one very great blunder, danger that has come about is in those days, if one has to meet somebody, then there has to be a physical vicinity. So which was not very easy. Access was not very easy. Later on the landline phones came. The landline also is fixed in one place. So somebody is calling, whom did you call? What was the call? What did they say? What did you say? It was very easy. But now the mobiles have come. Nowadays everybody has a mobile, and they even put a password also, so nobody can check what is inside. Isn't it? They put a password also. Mothers want to check the daughter's mobiles. They want to check. So they put password and keep it. Or they take the mobile into the bathroom also. They don't leave it in the table. So ever since this kind of mobile facility came, the degradation also increased it terribly because of this. Because in this way the infection which I told you, that infection can multiply in this way. So the main principle that is being highlighted in this shloka about Chukadeva Goswami staying only for a time when the cow can be milked. The whole idea is the association between brahmacharis and grihasthas should be fruitful and it should be spiritually elevating. Mahat vichalanam pumsam grihinam dina chetasam nishreyasaya Bhagavan kalpate nanyate pachit. Like that, there is one verse in the 10th canto which says Nanda Baba is telling to Gargamuni. Now Gargamuni is a saintly person and Nanda Baba is a Vaishya having cows and a family and everything. So he is telling on a very practical level. See, I have not yet come to the Vaishnava level. After a minute or two I will tell you about the Vaishnava level. Right now we are talking about a Vedic life and sadhus in the Vedic life. So he is saying Mahat Vichalanam Pumsam. Oh, saint, personalities like you are verily like a traveling, walking, talking tirtham. You are traveling from one place to another to tell some tidings about Bhagavan, Supreme Lord. And you take pity on people like us who have our in a family, our business, our so many things we are tied up with in this world. We are not free to move about like you, but you are moving about. And you have no other purpose other than elevating us and enlightening us, taking us back to Godhead. That is your goal. Like that is telling. So, the traditional Vedic system is that all the Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, they all worship a Brahmana. And all the seven classes worship a sannyasi, all the other seven, they worship a sannyasi. And in this way, the saintly order, a renounced order, is supposed to maintain the stature what we are talking now, and be spiritually beneficial to society. And the saintly person should be so pure that in their saintly order, that they should actually be able to stably stay in their purity as well as elevate the purity of others. There is one Puranic story. A brahmachari goes house to house, Babadi Bhikshandehi, asking for bhiksha. So when he goes to one house, there is a mother who is breastfeeding the child. So as soon as this brahmachari is seeing the breast of the mother when she is feeding the child, there are tears gliding down his eyes, gliding down his cheeks. And he starts weeping. And why is he weeping? The reason is given. There is a Sanskrit shloka which says that. It says, he immediately thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. He said, my dear Lord, as soon as a child is born, the mother's breast supplies milk. Immediately. How wonderful you are that for all the 8.4 million species of life, you have kept their food. When you are there for me, you are my mother, you are my father, you are my bandhu, you are my wealth, you are my education, you are my pran. You are everything for me. Tvameva mata chapita tvameva tvameva bandushcha saka tvameva tvameva vidyadravinam tvameva tvameva sarvam mama deva deva. So this verse says, you are everything for me. You are be all and end all for me. So that type of thought came in his mind. So the brahmachari should be like this only. Brahmachari sannyasi means renounced order. One should see the hand of the Lord everywhere, wherever he goes. Now Shukadeva Goswami is going to some grihastha's house. They are milking the cow and telling, please take your seat. Tell us something about how we can approach Krishna. Then he will share. So we should have something valuable to share with others, whomever we come across in our life. That is the main point here. And coming to ISKCON, in ISKCON society, we are a Vaishnava society. Vaishnava society and Vedic society may resemble each other in many respects, but there are very clear-cut differences. In Vaishnava society, if a grihastha is very advanced, they are worshipable and respectable even by brahmacharis and sannyasis also. Like you will see Gaura Kishore Das Babaji used to sit and attend the lectures of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was earlier grihastha, but later he became like a Paramahamsa. Paramahamsa Babaji. He became like a Paramahamsa. So he would come to attend his lectures in Swanand Sukhada Kunj. Used to come and attend. Similarly, you find when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is going to South India, he comes to the home of Sarum Bhattacharya and offers obeisances. And Bhattacharya says, my Lord, I should offer you obeisances. Why do you offer me obeisances? And Mahaprabhu says, any householder devotee, Vaishnava, they worship Lord Krishna and take care of him very lovingly in their homes. They get empowerment to bless even a sannyasi. Like that he says. So a grihastha doing their duty very perfectly, they also become very enlightened and elevated, and they can become enlightened sometimes more than a brahmachari sannyasi also. They can become worshipable. So we find Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so close to Srivas Thakur and his wife Malini. In their home, they had a rasasthali which is called Srivasangan. There they used to have everyday whole night kirtan, isn't it? All Vaishnavas assembling there. So once Mahaprabhu told Srivas Thakur, don't worry, your son has passed away, but me and Nityananda Prabhu will become your children. We both will be your children. He said, and that is why Mahaprabhu on that day said, how will I leave someone who loves me so much? So he thought of his sannyas on that day. So in this way, Advaita Acharya Prabhu and Sita Thakurani, Srivas Thakur Prabhu and Malini Mataji, you find. So in this way there are many families with which Mahaprabhu, Raghava Pandit and his sister Damayanti. So we find Mahaprabhu's interaction. But if you read all through the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you will find Mahaprabhu's interaction with Advaita Acharya Prabhu, Srivas Thakur elaborately. And women dealt with Mahaprabhu in a very respectful manner because he was in the sannyas order. Once Mahaprabhu spoke to them and told them that, oh, all of you wives of the Vaishnavas, I consider you all equal to your husbands because you all are equally enlightened in Vaishnava Siddhanta like your husbands. So Mahaprabhu appreciates them from a distance, but there is no socializing or mixing too much. There is not much given and take, you will not see in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Unnecessarily. The whole reason is this only, that the saintly order has certain restrictions, not only with women, even with kings and politicians and other things. Now you may have a question in mind, but what about Srila Prabhupada? You know, he met George Harrison and he met many big politicians also, And Prabhupada, in Bombay, Prabhupada made an announcement. Anybody who is ready to become life member, I will come and eat in your house. I will stay there. Of course, you have to make without onion, garlic, and devotees will offer. And Prabhupada made them life members. Actually, which means Prabhupada had the potency to you know, swallow all their sinful reactions, huh? And still not get affected. Huh? It's like, you know, the zeroth law of thermodynamics. Huh? You heard, no? See, you are 3000 degrees centigrade. Huh? And somebody's home, you go there, minus 200 degrees centigrade. Huh? So you will still remain 2800 degrees, isn't it? you are very high potential Vaishnava. You can swallow the sinful reaction of anybody. You can eat and you can, no? You can, sir. Prabhupada was powerful like that. Huh? So, in our situation, there are restrictions are there. That is why. Hmm? So, we should take the example of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You can see Madhavendra Puri, he was sitting at the bank of Govindakundan just chanting. Some ladies who were fetching water, they saw him. And then when Krishna later on came as a covered boy and gave him a pot of milk, huh? He said that some of the ladies watched you were sitting and chanting continuously. He was Ayachakavrati he was doing. Of course, Ayachakavrati he was the one who was doing, but Goswamis did Madhukari. Madhukari is also sanctioned. But the idea is, one should accept whatever is available in charity and propagate the Bhagavata Dharma far and wide. And one should not bring about some artificial intimacy on the bodily platform. That is not appreciated. Generally what happens when one is preaching Krishna consciousness and becoming closer with anybody, there are two components in our dealings. One is a personal component, another one is a spiritual component. So the spiritual component, there is no problem. But in the personal component, there should be Lakshman Rekha. We should know how much, like there is one sannyasi, Srirangapuri, who was selling Nimai Pandit. He was asking about Nimai Pandit, where are you from and everything. He said, I am from Navadvip. Oh, you are from Navadvip. I had come to Navadvip to one particular place of one Jagannath Mishra. In their house, that lady, oh, she was like a mother of all sannyasis. She was cooking one banana flower sabji, which was so tasty, it is still in my tongue. It was delicious. Now you may wonder, is a sannyasi speaking about some banana flower sabji, which was made by some Mataji in somebody's house. But actually, although he may recollect, in Vaishnava philosophy, it is a personal philosophy. So one may heartily appreciate. But he says that she was like a mother of all sannyasis. The way she served all people in renounced order with great affection and love and devotion. So he's appreciating. So which means a person in the renounced order, it is not that a person cannot appreciate Mataji, who is very great-hearted in serving Prasad. But it should be, all should be done within Lakshman Rekha. It should be done with proper etiquettes. It should be done in proper etiquettes. When the etiquettes are lost, when improper intimacy is established, when one crosses the Lakshman Rekha, it's understandable what is Lakshman Rekha. One shouldn't cross. That is actually, then we go to the bodily platform. Relationship on the bodily platform is condemned completely. So in this way, we can see the and this was the Brahmacharya association with householders, yeah. And the subsequent section is very interesting, 9 to 12. Then they are asking, earlier they were asking questions about Shukadeva Goswami, now they are asking question about Parikshit Maharaj. What are they amazed about Parikshit Maharaj? Why did this personality wanted to go to the bank of Ganga and hearing Bhagavatam and give up his body in 7 days? Because his body acted as a shelter for everybody. That is their main question. See, if a tree is like a banyan tree and it is giving shelter to many birds, many passers-by, it is giving fruits, it is giving tree bark, it is giving gums, it is giving firewood branches, and it is protecting people from winter and summer, and it is a very large tree. And if somebody is cutting down such a tree, naturally you will ask, why are you cutting such a tree? Unnecessarily, foolishly. Similarly, Parikshit, here they are giving very nice examples on how Parikshit is offering shelter to all, And why should such a person give up his body? So they're talking about the qualities of Parikshit, birth, death and activities of Parikshit. So Prabhupada is saying there was nothing undesirable in the life of Parikshit. The book is inside. See, why is Parikshit's birth very special? It's called Vishnu Rath. He was protected by Krishna. Why is Parikshit's death wonderful? Bhagavatam has spoken to him. All the demigods have flowers. Bhagavatam has spoken to him. So how is Parikshit's activities wonderful? Chastised Kali. That is one thing. Besides that, Prabhupada also describes very nicely in that purport that how you can see 9 to 12. Can go to the 9. See, in verse 9 purport, if you see, as you said, he chastised Kali. That is explained. And then come to 10, verse 10. If you go see the purport in 10, actually many people struggle to come to the kingly power. Nowadays, if you see, people do so much canvassing to get their political power. But sometimes you find two parties, somehow in a narrow way, one party is leading the other. Say one party is getting 55 votes, other party is getting 45. Is it a good government? Not a good government, isn't it? Imagine if one got 95 votes, other one got 5. It's a good government, isn't it? But as far as Parikshit was concerned, he didn't have to work hard for acquiring the post. Everything, he inherited the kingdom, naturally. So in that purport, Prabhupada writes very nicely. He says that he was doing, and also not only inherited it from grandfathers, but sometimes it is likely that somebody inherited a kingdom, but he is like a dummy, he is useless, because he couldn't do any good to the people. He is drinking, smoking, and exploiting the public. The people will curse, actually. His forefathers handed over this property to him, and he is like Vena was doing, if you see. He didn't allow the Brahmanas to do yajna. He stopped them from worshipping Supreme Lord. He called them all unchaste because they didn't worship him. Whereas here you find Parikshit, he was doing well in the administration, and he was worthy of the good name of his forefathers. In fact, people came to Parikshit and they glorified their forefathers. Saratya Parashada Sevana Sakhya Dautya Virasana Anugamana Stana Sravana Pranamat Snigdeshu Pandushu Jagat Pranatim Chavishnoho Bhaktim Karoti Nripatish Charana Ravinde. This is a verse spoken by the citizens of Parikshit. They are telling, my dear king, your grandfathers like Yudhishthira and Arjuna were so great that Lord became their Sarathi. Lord became their Virasana, means carrying a sword in the hand, going round and giving protection at night. Lord became a Shanti Dut for them. Lord became like a servant washing the feet of the saintly people in the Ratsu Yajna. So all this type of services Lord was doing for your grandfathers. He behaved exactly like a cousin brother of Arjuna, and he didn't play the role of God. He did this type of service. When Parikshit heard it, his hair was standing on end and his body felt transcendental pleasure. He got thrilled by hearing that. When people would come and tell him. So in this way, people are happy with the forefathers as well as with Parikshit also. And then he's saying, he was worthy of the good name, and there was nothing undesirable in his opulence and administration. And then in the next 11th verse, he says that all the kings were all very happy to pay that tax. Because they were very happy with his rule. And he was full of youth and strength. So Prabhupada writes in the purport, he was quite a young man and could enjoy life with power and opulence. There was no question of retiring from active life. No difficulty in collecting the state taxes because he was so powerful and chivalrous. Enemies were coming and bowing down and paying him tax. And he was a very pious king. And his kingdom was full of prosperity. How? There were milk, grains, metals. All the rivers and mountains are full of potency, he says. So materially everything was satisfactory. So everything was perfect. And then the next also, read the translation, 12th one. Wow, 12th one, the verse is also very important. Shivaya lokasya bhavaya bhutaye. Yavuttama shloka parayana janaha. Jivantinatmartam asau parashrayam. Mumocha nirvidya kutah kalevaram. Yeah. See, he's saying bhavaya and bhutaye, he's saying. So the word bhavaya means Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary says bhava samhartum, he's saying, which means to put a full stop to the samsara. Bhava samhartum, he says. And then he also says bhutaye means economic development and material welfare. So Shivaya Lokasya means for the people, he took care of both. Spiritual welfare and material welfare. Read the translation.
Those who are devoted to the cause of the personality of Godhead live only for the welfare, development and happiness of others. They do not live for any selfish interest. So even though the Emperor Parikshit was free from all attachment to worldly possessions, how could he give up his mortal body, which was shelter for others?
Yeah. So that purport of the Prabhupada says many things. Like, you know, most important thing with Parikshit is he was fully detached and he had no selfish interest. And his life was devoted for the cause of the personality of Godhead. And thus for the welfare and happiness of others. So four things are said here. For an ideal leader, who is a shelter-giving leader, he should be fully detached. From what? If you see, the example of Janaka is given in the Bhagavad Gita. Karmanaiva kisam siddhim astito janaka dayaha. He says, you know, dutiful yet detached. That means the king would do all his duties as a king in terms of collecting taxes and giving the facilities to people, you know, inspiring them to take to Krishna consciousness, and also not possessing any selfish interest at all, personally, no selfish interest. And he was detached from material enjoyment. You can see in the Ambarish section there is one verse. So we can recite this verse, a beautiful verse. Griheshu dareshu suteshu bandhushu dipottamasyan dhanavaji vastushu akshaya ratna varanam badadishu anantakoshe shvakarot asanmatim. See, Ambarish Maharaj had Griheshu, his homes, his wives, his children, his relatives and friends, and elephants, and you can read the translation, all of them. Read it.
Maharaj Parikshit, Maharaj Ambarish gave up all attachment to the household affairs, wives, children, friends and relatives, to the best of the powerful elephants, to beautiful chariots, carts, horses and inexhaustible jewels, and to ornaments, garments and inexhaustible treasury. He gave up attachment to all of them, regarding them as temporary and material.
See the last line, what it says, asanmatim, no attachment. Akarot asanmatim. So he accepted all of them, but accepted them without attachment. There was one king called Shikadvaja. So this king somehow saw that the sannyasi sadhus are getting too much respect. But although I am a great king, I don't get so much honor and respect. So he developed a desire to become a sannyasi. So, of course, he hadn't gone too old for Vanaprastha. But somehow or other he took to renounce daughter. He wore the donned the dress of a mendicant and went to forest. But in the forest, his mind was very disturbed. So one another sannyasi came, his way, who was very cheerful, joyful, innocent like a child. So when this fellow saw him, he said, "See, I have also taken to this order of sannyasi, but somehow I am not happy. I have come to the forest, I have left the kingdom, everything, and I have come here, but I am not happy." Then the other sannyasi, he knew very well who this person was. But still he asked him, "By the way, I don't know, who are you?" He asked him. Then he said, "You are asking, who are you? You don't know who I am? Hear from me who I am, I will tell you now." He said, "I am the Shikadvaja Raja." He said, "Who is Shikadvaja? Is it Shika? Who is it? I don't know. Shikadvaja, who is that?" So he said, "Let me tell you about who he is." Then he said, "I had this kingdom, that kingdom, so much of wealth, so many queens, and I had conquered this 2 years ago, I had conquered that kingdom 5 years ago, and our treasury was this much." He went on speaking half an hour. Then that other saint told him, he said, "Wait a minute, now I can tell you why you are so unhappy in the jungle. Because you have given up your things there and come here, but attachment for them you have not given up. Your mind is still there, lingering there, and that is why you are so sad here." So he said real giving up actually means one should lose taste for material enjoyment. Then one can have all material objects to be used in Krishna service. Absolutely no problem. Ambarish Maharaj was like that. He lost his taste for material enjoyment completely. And he was living in the midst of them. He was living in the midst of wives, children, you know, khajana, property, everything. But none of them affected him. He was like, and like Padma Patram Ivambasa, we say, no? In the same manner, wherever you are posted as a leader, in any situation, we will see that there is a tendency in us to look for, you know, some special privileges, comforts, and also to become attached to things which we, you know, which we are given. Correct, no? So that type of mental attachment weakens our spiritual strength. Like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Sanatana Goswami, he was staring at his blanket, isn't it? To indicate to him that, you know, it doesn't befit a sadhu like you. Then he went and exchanged it with a torn quilt from a beggar. Isn't it? And Mahaprabhu glorified Raghunath Das Goswami. Nityananda Prabhu said also how Raghunath Das's renunciation was glorified. So one who is going to lead in any role, only if they are detached, they will have clarity of thought and clarity of speech and clarity of action. Only when we are detached. If we have some attachment, then our decisions also will be colored by, like, you know the story of that two cats went to a monkey not knowing how to divide the bread, you know, the big bread. But the monkey had some ulterior motives. Correct, no? He said, "Don't worry, I will cut." So when he cut, one became big, another one became small. So what he did? Yeah, he cut a little bit and ate it himself. "Now is it all right?" He said. This fellow said, "No, mine is too small now." He said, "Okay, I will eat a little bit from his side." So from the other side, he ate a little bit. "Now, yeah, is it all right now?" This fellow said, "Hey, they've gone too small now." "Okay, I'll eat from this side." So in this way, what he did? In the name of giving decision, he only ate everything. Isn't it? Similarly, if we are attached in problem solving, then we will become enjoyers in solving the problems of others. Because when we know the weaknesses of others, we may exploit them, knowing their weakness. Correct, no? So that is why those who are taking the role of leaders in any capacity, they have to be detached. For example, a parent want to, you know, have some entertainment for the child. They may buy a TV and give the child some cartoon or something like that, let him watch. But sometimes the children are playing outside and the parents sit and watch TV. And they are watching 6 hours, 8 hours. Correct, no? So they are not detached. Correct? If parents are detached, they may only use it for particular purpose, some educational purpose or something like that. Other times, close it. Because they are not detached, they misuse it. Same way, any leader in any position who is given some money to handle, who is given some people to handle, they require they should be fully detached and no selfish interest except serving the living entities on behalf of the Supreme Lord. So Lord is only taking care of everybody and I become a nimitta. I become an instrument. That is the way Parikshit Maharaj was. I mean, Ambarish Maharaj also served like that. And most importantly, you take Yudhishthira Maharaj, you take Parikshit, you take Ambarish, their life is devoted to the service of the Supreme Lord. From that is actually the place from where they get the nourishment and strength to become detached. When one is attached to the lotus feet of Krishna, they can be easily detached from things which are detrimental. You see? And because of this, and when he is also devoted to the Supreme Lord, he always thinks of welfare of others and happiness of others. Then he became a shelter for others. So these four points are very vital to be able to offer shelter to others, if you want to offer shelter to others. Imagine, for example, if a woman comes to somebody and says that, you know, I have been, you know, there was some big famine or some drought or some big terrible fire accident somewhere and I am left alone. Now I need some shelter from somebody. So who can give her shelter? Somebody who takes the role of her father. Father or mother for her, they can provide shelter. If somebody else offers her shelter, then they will exploit her, correct? No? So in the same manner, here the king who is offering shelter to the citizens, he should see the citizens as children of God, correct? No? Not only the humans, even the animals and birds. That's like Shiva Chakravarti gave shelter to a pigeon and a, who was the other one? Eagle and the pigeon, isn't it? So, in this way, the attitude of great souls, like you see Yudhishthira Maharaj, for example, any of you know, where did Yudhishthira Maharaj get his intelligence from? For doing what to do, what not to do. Where he drew his intelligence from? Yes? Krishna? Vipra Dharma Achyuta Ashraya, that is said, he was taking shelter, but there are two sources of his wisdom, it is said. Bhishma and Krishna. Actually, he was taking shelter of Krishna and Krishna only told him to follow Bhishma. Bhishma taught him all the political related things. And he simply followed these two personalities. You will see that. And also, he always acted for Lord's pleasure. At one time, he wanted to do yajna, you know, Ratsu Yajna. At that time, he was suddenly fearful. Am I trying to do this Yajna in order to promote myself? Maybe I want to become very popular. That's why I want to do this. So, he asked Krishna, he asked Vedavyas, he asked many, many saintly people, please tell me, am I doing it for my own selfish aggrandizement? Or am I doing it for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord to glorify him? He was very worried about his motivations and intentions. See, this is the meaning of ideal king. The ideal leader should always worry about why am I doing what I am doing? What is the purpose of my doing this? What is my motivation in what I am trying to do? So, like Parikshit Maharaj here, he is punishing Kali and protecting the cow and bull, you see. Similarly, it's the duty of the of any leader to protect the citizens, protect the dependents from unwanted elements. Just like a father and mother, they protect their children. A minister or any executive head of the state, they protect the people from vices as well as from thieves and rogues. They offer them protection. And one protection will be considered complete when the leader offers the people the shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. Then only the protection is considered complete. Otherwise, simply saving them from vices alone is not enough. So that is why, then how can he offer that shelter to people? Can any of you say? How can a king offer the shelter of Krishna's lotus feet to all his dependents? By following one. Varnashrama is for engagement. Varnashrama is actually material engagement, but you can offer the fruits to Krishna from Varnashrama. Yes. It is basically engagement according to propensities. That is correct. That is actually the propensity to do a particular type of activity in Varnashrami acts. Yeah. Yes?
By promoting Bhagavad Dharma.
By promoting Bhagavad Dharma for the people. And for that, what he has to do? Very first thing. Yeah, himself has to take shelter of the Supreme Lord. Which Ambarish Maharaj did, Yudhishthira Maharaj did, Parikshit did, Prataprudra did, all of them did. So, he should take shelter of Krishna firmly and then he should offer the same shelter to others. So, giving shelter to people doesn't mean we give shelter. We don't give shelter. We give Krishna shelter to people. Ultimately, we have no power to shelter anyone. Ultimately, Krishna only can shelter everyone. So, in this way, that's why I had given the heading. What heading I had given? Yeah. Qualities of a shelter providing leader. Yeah. He was fully detached and no selfish interest. And his life was devoted for the cause of Supreme Personality of Godhead. That means to serve the Lord's purpose, Brahminical culture. For that purpose, he used his life. And fourthly, for the welfare and happiness of others. And all this is achieved when one becomes a devotee. Being a good devotee, he had all these qualifications, good qualifications. So this is the lesson. The king is the representative of the Supreme Lord, and therefore king's interest must be identical with that of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord wants all living beings to be obedient to him and thereby become happy. Therefore, the king's interest is to guide all subjects back to the kingdom of God. I will try to present one concept. We will see whether it becomes easy to grasp. Morning we were hearing from Gauranga Darshan Prabhu about how the Mahavishnu and then the subsequent Vishnus, they all come and the incarnations come. So the jivas from the spiritual world who want to be independent of the Lord, those jivas are all kept in the navel of Mahavishnu. And sleeping in the navel of Mahavishnu, they are all idling there for a long time. At that time, the personified Vedas, they offer a prayer to Mahavishnu. Uttishta, Uttishta, Govinda, Uttishta, Garuda, Dvaja. Correct, no? They offer a prayer. My dear Lord Mahavishnu, please, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You are an ocean of bliss. You are the source of everything. And they are glorifying him very nicely. And then they are telling him, now these living entities are sleeping in your navel. They are idling right now. They neither want to serve in the spiritual world. They don't want to serve in the spiritual world. That's why they have come and they are in the navel of Vishnu, isn't it? At the same time, materially also they cannot enjoy on their own. It is not possible. They have no ability. You are their father. So you start your, enact your play with Maya now by creating the material worlds and giving them an opportunity to run here and there with their material bodies and give vent to their desires and then gradually get purified and go back to Godhead. See, this is such a very deep wisdom that our scriptures are giving. Like once upon a time, a boy who had to go from Pune to Bombay along with his father to attend the Bhagavatam class in Chopadi temple. Morning. So early morning, 4 o'clock, father was about to leave. But the boy was very adamant. He said, Papa, today I will drive the car. And the father has a big Innova car. This boy is so small, his hands also cannot reach the steering. But he wants to drive. Should the father give in? But everybody, wife is ready, others are ready in the family. This is the only boy who says, if you don't let me sit in the steering, then I am not coming. I will be alone at home. So because of one fellow, nobody can go. So, and he's lying inside the room. This is the way the jiva is lying in Mahavishnu's navel. Exactly. Now what do you think the father can do? The father is telling, you sit in the back seat and relax better. I will take you. But he is very adamant. So what should the father do?
He can put the child on his lap while driving for some time and just let him.
He's saying, He can hold the steering, keeping him on the lap. Anyway, the father gave him a pedaling car. He gave him a pedaling car. So the boy started pedaling car. He went from Kunjaberi temple up to GPO. You know, after that he got tired pedaling the car. Then he got off his car and told the father, "Papa, now I'll sit behind it, relax now. I'm tired now." He left the car. So why the pedaling car is given? To give the realization to the child that I cannot go to Bombay in this car. It's not possible. Similarly, we all are given the material body, which is like a pedaling car. And we get fed up with this material body. Enough, enough now. I cannot enjoy with this body. I don't want to enjoy separately. So then we align with the Lord and go. In this way, that is why the living entities want to go back to Godhead. Still, they have the propensity for material enjoyment also. Both are there. So it is not a very easy job to purify them. Like you have seen how a mother feeds the medicine to the child, you have seen. She has a shank in which she has the medicine. And she gives a lollipop in one, you know, with one hand. The child is eating lollipop. Hey, very nice. When the child closes the eyes, she puts the medicine. The child will say, "Oh, now it's bitter now." Again, lollipop. So lollipop and medicine and lollipop, somehow she feeds it. So similarly, the living entities, to take them back to Godhead is not a very easy thing. Paramatma is standing in our heart and is trying to, you know, inspire us. Of course, we will turn to Super Soul and we will get all knowledge if we want, but we don't desire to go back to Godhead. Prabhupada says in another purport, most of us not at all want to go back to Godhead. Any of you read that statement? You saw it? Yeah. Huh? Yeah. Read the another purport, no? Yeah. Gauranga Darshan Prabhu very encouragingly read those statements which will give you very hope-giving. In the morning, we are saying, he didn't want to discourage us by reading that statement, you know. Most of us, what Prabhupada says? Most of us do not at all want to go back to Godhead, he says. So, in this way, the leader's job of, the king's job of purifying the citizens and taking them back to Godhead by administering the Vedic formula is not very easy. So the king is the representative of the Supreme Lord, and therefore the king's interest must be identical with that of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord wants all living beings to be obedient to him and thereby become happy. So why does the Lord want us to be obedient to him? For our happiness only. Yeah. Therefore the king's interest is to guide all subjects back to the kingdom of God. And another point Prabhupada makes in that same purport. If all living beings are satisfied with food and shelter and they also obey the prescribed rules, there cannot be any disturbance between one living being and another. So Prabhupada says that the food production and food distribution in the modern times are spoiled by greedy people who want to make a lot of money, because of which the living entities are fighting with one another. So two things Prabhupada is saying. There should be a Krishna conscious society, and there should be proper uniform distribution of, you know, food, clothing, shelter for all living beings. If these two things are done, in this world we can bring about peace and no quarrel between living entities. Yeah. So obey the prescribed rules means obey Supreme Lord. And satisfied with food and shelter means the proper material distribution. Like that is saying. So in this way, even all of us, in our own capacity, we can learn how to give shelter to people who come to us. What are all necessary for us to follow to be able to provide shelter? Now you go to verse number 13. Read the translation 13.
We know that you are expert in the meaning of all subjects, except some portions of the Vedas, and thus you can clearly explain the answers to all the questions we have just put to you.
Yeah. So, see, elsewhere we read, Suta Goswami is Romaharshana Suta's son. So, Romaharshana Suta was born of, he was married in Patiloma marriage. Isn't it? Intercaste marriage. But actually, Anuloma is also intercaste. But Anuloma is permitted, where the man will be Brahmana, woman will be Kshatrani. That is all right. Or the man is Kshatriya, he may marry somebody of Shudra. That is Anuloma marriage. Pratiloma means opposite. Like the wife is Brahmani and the husband is Kshatriya. that type of this thing. Like our Kardamani Devahuti, is it Anuloma or Patiloma marriage? Anuloma, because he is a Brahmana and she comes from a Kshatriya family. That is favorable marriage, isn't it? Proper marriage. But Patiloma is opposite, like Ayati. Ayati was a Kshatriya, he married Devyani. Devyani, who was a Brahmani. So it is a Patiloma marriage. So, Romaharshana Sutta also had a Patiloma family, and Sutta Goswami is coming in a family. Elsewhere it comes such a talk, Daushkulyam Adim, he says, Vidunoti Kalmasham. In one another verse he will say, in the Bhagavatam, Daushkulyam, but you will get it, Daushkulyam. So, which means, my Kula Dosh that has come upon me, he is washed away by my association with Shukadeva Goswami, with the great saintly person. In this way, he glorifies Shukadeva Goswami as one who is capable of washing away any impurity that might come. But here they are saying that sometimes the Vaishnava preachers, if you compare them with the regular, typical Vedic mantra reciters and yajna performers, if you compare with them, general people are more attracted to whom? Are they attracted to Vaishnava preachers or those who can make yajna kund and everything and perform? Yeah. Why? Because the Vedic sacrifices involve some Vedic chant in a very loud tone. And when people hear that, the common people think this is something very bombastic, very lofty. Namaste yastu bhagavan vishveshwaraya mahadevaya trayam bhagaya trivuran dhagaya trikalagni kalaya kalagni rudraya mrityunjayaya sarveshwaraya namaha swaha. So when they hear it, they say, my lord, this is far out. On the other hand, Vaishnava preachers, they may sit and give a lecture. They may take the bead bag and they may be chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. When people see that, this is too simple, they think. Isn't it? So, the common people, and not only that, see, common people, what are they attracted by? They see that, you know, these people are sitting in certain direction. You should face towards east or face towards north. And you should have til, you should have the darbhaga, truva grass. And you should make the yajna kund and everything. And they are pouring ghee and chanting some mantras and swaha and everything. So, when they see these brahmanas and they do a lot of mudras and all, move the hands and all that they will do. When they see all these things, it looks like a very, you know, very attractive for them. Actually, if you see the meaning of the mantras they chant, they are pretty simple. Sahasrani sahasrasho ye rudramati bhumyam. So, if you read this, Rudram, what it says, oh my dear Lord Shiva, you take your trishul and go 1,000 yojanas far away from me. Don't come near. That's what he's saying. Don't hurt me. I promise. Yeah, I promise to follow the Supreme Lord and don't pierce me with your trishul. So, ye anneshu vividyanti patreshu pibato janana means, we are, you know, in anywhere there is food kept which is not offered to Lord, that food is contaminated food, it says. That food is tamoguni food. So, if you read the Vedic mantras, they will say, this is Shukla Paksha, this is this particular mass, I so and so, whose gotram is this particular gotram, in this particular occasion, I am taking a sankalpa, you know, that I, correct, no? Bharat Varshe, Bharatakande. So, if you see, whatever you may say in English or Hindi, they say in Sanskrit, that's all. Those who don't know Sanskrit, for them, it is too fantastic. They become very attracted. So it's very fascinating, correct? No? So in this way, when people watch the brahmanas' recitation of the mantra, Vedic mantra chant, they think they are very learned, they are highly advanced, they are worshipable, they think like that. But when they see the itinerant preachers, Prabhupada uses the word, those people who are preaching the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, how lofty they are, they don't know. Actually, the karmis are after proprietorship. The jnanis are after enjoyership. The yogis are after controllership. And bhaktas come beyond all these three categories. Bhaktas are neither bhogis nor tyagis. Bhakta means they use everything in Lord's service. Bhaktas means they have given their body, their mind, their words, their hearts, their homes, their everything to Supreme Lord. That is the meaning of the devotee. So that became proven in the pastime of Ambarish Maharaj and Durvasamani. Correct? This pastime we should narrate everywhere we go. People should know that such a big yogi had to run from pillar to post because of offending a great devotee king, Ambarish, who was in the Grihastha order. Correct, no? So this pastime proves a yogi is inferior to a bhakta. And another pastime, Saubari Muni versus Garuda. That pastime proves what? A great jnani, a great speculator, underwater meditation performer. He was also a yogi and a jnani, isn't it? So, you know, he offended Garuda and he later on fell down because of that. You will see that. So, people generally are fascinated. That is why Prabhupada writes here, the difference between fruitive brahmanas versus itinerant preacher paramahamsas. The example we get in Srimad Bhagavatam of yajnik brahmans, you know, when Krishna told his covered boys and go and fetch some prasad because they wanted it. They went, but the yajnik brahmanas looked at the boys and they turned their face away. And they continued with their procedure. They didn't even answer. While their wives were very great devotees, as soon as they heard Krishna Balaram have come and they are very hungry, they felt a pinch in their hearts. They were about to run from there. And covered boys said, "Oh mothers, in your ecstasy to see Krishna, don't run with your empty hand." They said, "Please take your all dabbas, everything, prasadam dabba, everything. And make sure you carry for us also, not only for Krishna Balaram. Carry for everybody." So then they went and served Krishna Balaram, you see. In our temple, the last slide you have seen, picture, they are yajnik brahmana's wives who are watching, who want to serve. So we can see that yajnik brahmanas were very intelligent, I mean, in terms of reciting the Vedic mantras. But in terms of service to the Lord, they were so insignificant, we can say, because later on, when their wives came, they were appreciative of their wives. They themselves wanted to go, but they were afraid of whom? That goes to show how much their understanding of Krishna as the Supreme Lord is so limited. So, that is actually the main point here. They are telling that you may not be able to chant the Vedic mantras very eloquently, but you know the spirit behind them, which is more important. Because if you know the meaning and spirit of the Vedic mantras, although you may not be able to pronounce like the traditional Brahmanas, we are more happy with it because you will give us the essence, just like South Indian Brahman. He was crying tears of love for Krishna, which was glorified by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, isn't it? So, on the other hand, the other Brahmanas were only like stereotyped Brahmanas. So, if you read the purport, this is the main point. Prabhupada is talking about Parivrajakacharyas and this type of stereotyped Brahmanas. Very important purport it is. Prabhupada says realization is more important than parrot-like chanting. So this is a very important theme. See, Lord Chaitanya always has captured the essential point in our philosophy, which is to cultivate loving eagerness for serving Krishna's lotus feet, you see. That old Orissan lady climbed on the top of his shoulder. So Mahaprabhu glorified her. The South Indian Brahmana cried tears by looking at the Krishna becoming Partha Sarathi. Mahaprabhu glorified that. Can you give more instances in Mahaprabhu's life where Mahaprabhu is capturing the essence in people's hearts and not looking for stereotyped Govinda crossing? Yeah? That already I told that past time. That is our old Orissan lady. Yeah, yes? Who? Dukhi, yeah, correct. Dukhi was rendering service. Mahaprabhu told her, "Today onwards you will be Sukhi," he told her, yes?
Kolavecha Sridhar.
Kolavecha Sridhar. Kolavecha Sridhar, you don't hear any big material qualifications. But Mahaprabhu was deeply touched by his devotion. You can say, yeah? Haridas Thakur, born in a Muslim family, Mahaprabhu made him Namacharya. And that is why Advaita Acharya Prabhu also gave Haridas Thakur Shraddha Patra. Correct, no? Shraddha Patra he gave him. In any of you know, you have seen Shraddha Patra, what you have seen it? Like in our homes when they do Shraddha, there will be a big plate. Huge plate. There will be practically 25-30 items will be there. When we were small kids, you know, we will request a parent, can I go and sit in that? My mother will say, hey, that's not for you. That's for Brahmana with the biggest belly will sit there. Only, and he will be like a leader of the Brahmanas is given. Whereas that Shraddha Patra, he gave it to whom? Haridas Thakur. At that time, people were extremely critical about Brahmanas mixing with Muslims and other things. He was so bold, even in such times. Advaita Acharya Prabhu, which means Advaita Acharya Prabhu captured the essential qualification of Haridas Thakur, you see, following in the footsteps of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Same way, Ramananda Rai was a Shudra and also a governor. How much Mahaprabhu was anti-Pratabhudra? He refused to meet him, saying that Sandarshanam, Vishiginam, Yoshitam, Atavish, all those things he said. But Ramananda Rai, Mahaprabhu embraced him, cried tears. You can see that. So, Kibavi Prabhu Kibanyasi, Shudra Kenanai, Jai Krishna Tatvaita. So, that is the point here. Paratlik chanting is useless. Realization is more important. Yeah, and then the next section, 14th verse onwards, we are hearing about Vyasadeva's birth and where was this? Where was he there? This place is mentioned, Samyaprashad, Badrikashram. And then Vyasadeva is noting the future anomalies in Kali Yuga. That list was given in that book very nicely. Shakti Hrasam means people will be decreased in bodily strength. Ashraddhadanan, faithless. Nisatvan, impatient due to lack of goodness. Durmedhan, dull-witted. Hrasita Ayushaha, reduced in duration of life. Durbhagan, unlucky. All the degraded qualities of Kali Yuga populace. So, when Vyasadeva is contemplating on the qualities of people who are going to come in Kali Yuga, a great amount of compassion is arising in his heart for the suffering souls. And he's thinking, how can I somehow inject the message of the Vedic truth into the hearts of people? How is this? How can I do it? Because the Kali Yuga people are going to be dull. See, one quality is mentioned, which is Shakti Hras, Nisatvan. That is, if somebody is not having sufficient sattva-guna, actually, to understand the Vedic literature, one will need a exceedingly high sattva to sit patiently and hear attentively and understand the deepest concepts given in the Vedic literature. Not very easy. So, later on, another Prabhupada writes, the birth rate is not their qualification. The Vedas and their ultimate goal, Sri Krishna, can be understood only by men with exceptional quality of goodness. And passion and ignorance disable them. That's what he says. So it is not that somebody is born in a Brahmana family is qualified for Vedas. It's not like that. If a Brahmana boy, you know, he becomes degraded and he goes to passion and ignorance, can he understand Vedas? No. So what disables us from understanding Vedas? Passion and ignorance. Nisatvan, he says. So now Vedavyas had a very difficult task in front of him. In front of him are people who don't have sattva. But he has to explain to them Vedas. Is it easy? And that is our challenge also nowadays, preaching. Isn't it? We want to preach to people who are indulging in a lot of bad habits, passion and ignorance. And how can they understand the spiritual subject? Like Prabhupada, when he was going to the West, he wrote that poem, you know, Markain Bhagavat. There he says, my dear Lord, the people are all absorbed in two modes of passion and ignorance. And they have no understanding of anything spiritual. How will I be able to explain this knowledge to them? You know, my name is Bhakti Vedanta. Neither do I have Bhakti nor I have any Vedantic wisdom. How will I reach them? But I have one faith. That is faith in your holy name and holy fame. Bhagavatam. when I distribute this Bhagavatams here, by reading it, they will get awakened. And then the Shannuatam, Sokata, Krishna, Punya, Shavana, Kirtanath, all those verses are written. They will read the Bhagavatam and get enlightened. They will chant the holy name and become ecstatic. In this way, what is impossible task for me to do alone, that will be made possible by you. Like that, Prabhupada glorified Krishna and depended on mercy of Guru and Krishna to reach out to them. So, like Prabhupada's compassion comes out in that poem. In the same manner, Vedavyasa also is feeling great compassion in his heart, seeing the condition of the living entities in the age of Kali Yuga. And then subsequently, it's mentioned about in the 17th, 18th verses, devotees of the Lord are the greatest philanthropists and real friends of society, Prabhupada says. They represent one and only one mission of great acharyas, to deliver the fallen souls back to Godhead. This is the only mission of the devotees. That means, all of us as devotees, we have to ask ourselves, morning to night we spend our day, and we spend weeks, and we spend months, how much this thought crosses our mind, that, oh, all the souls are suffering in the samsara davanal. I have to go out, reach out to them, introduce them, their eternal friend Krishna. Distribute a book to them, make them chant the holy name. So, actually we don't feel an outpour of compassion in our heart. Because preaching involves some hard work. We have to come out of our comfort zone. And we have to reach out to people. So one reason we don't reach out to the conditioned souls is because we have to do a lot of hard work. Going out, reaching out, selling books and all. Another reason we are not very interested is, they are not interested. We are not interested because? One is hard work, another reason is, they are not interested. Some people say, Prabhuji, if only they beg me for Bhagavad Gita, I will go and give. But they are not begging, they are making me a beggar. Isn't it? And everybody says, I'm uninterested. And it affects our ego very badly. We feel defeated when we come back, with a small face. On the other hand, many preachers ask, is there any program, Prabhuji, you want me to give your program, I will go and give, or something like that. So, because we can get an easy audience somewhere. But when you go out in the station to distribute a book, when you are turned away by the conditioned souls who are uninterested in Krishna, it's very painful for us. Correct, no? But we should remember, we have to become weapons of Acharya's compassionate heart. We have to become their instruments in their hands. So we should think, I may not want to go and give a book, but Prabhupada wants us to reach the books. Acharyas want us to reach out to the living entities. So despite my false ego, despite my disinterest, I will still go and, do it. Like that one should go. So, how did Vedavyas show his compassion to all the conditioned souls? So, I summarized from various places. So, three things I have put them together in one place. They are in different verses. One is, the four Vedas came from the four mouths of Brahma. They were all mixed together like an unsorted collection of jewels of various types. Chakravarti Thakur says this. He says, the four Vedas came from four mouths of Brahma. And they were like unsorted diamonds. Imagine there were blue diamonds, green diamonds, yellow diamond, orange diamond. They were all mixed together. So you sort it out into four Vedas. Like if you take the Rig Veda, it's all full of songs. Sama Veda is full of songs. Rig Veda is full of hymns. So he sorted them out separately. And why did he sort it out? It is said that the simplifying the Vedas, simplification of the Vedas, helps those people in passion and ignorance. Because they don't have the quality of goodness. Like for example, say you have your school textbook and you also have a notes. How many of you directly studied from the notes for your college subjects? Correct? You remember? Why do you directly go to notes instead of the school textbook? Very easy. Question answer, question answer. And they'll give you university questions also, in brackets. 5 times it has come in university. Correct, no? So they make your life very easy. Similarly, Vedavyas also took the Vedas and he divided them into 4 and he gave it to different disciples. And then they further processed it. And they made it more and more simpler and simpler. Just like now, Bhagavatam is difficult for us to study. But Gauranga Darshanpu has made Bhagavat Subhadini. Like that only. How many of you feel life has become more easy for you now? Hari Bol. That's what Vedavyas also did. Huh? Similar kind. Now you understand it easily, correct? Yeah. Now not only this, he is having many other devotees through whom what he is doing is further preparing materials based on Srimad Bhagavatam. He is making further and further, extracting, like it's like a gold mine, go to gold mine and extract. And make it easily understandable, available, ready-made, like shloka book you can carry in your pocket. Wherever you go, you can utter a shloka from Bhagavatam. Remember it. So in this way, Vedavyas compassionately made similar facility for them. Another thing is, Stri Shudra Dvija Bandhu Naam Shuti, what is that verse? Na Gochara, it comes now. There is one verse. See, the Stri, the women, the Shudra, the Dvija Bandhu, 25. So those people, what was happening in Kali Yuga, they were only undergoing one yajna, which is called Vivaha Yajna, that's all. There was no Garbhadhan Sanskar, there was no Dvija Sanskar. Directly they went to Vivaha, directly. So he saw the situation. So he saw that because of no Garbhadhan Sanskar and no Dvija, the Brahminical initiation, people are all very degraded because there are several sanskaras to be performed, a total of 40 sanskaras to be done. So people were not doing those sanskaras, so they were becoming very polluted and degraded. And their intelligence level went very low in Kali Yuga. So they won't be able to access the Vedas and Shastras. So what he did, he wrote the Mahabharata Puranas. He made it very easy for them to grasp by giving histories for them, historical episodes, which are very interesting for such people. So he gave them all. Like if you read Mahabharata, for example, you tell anybody, you know, there were 5 Pandava brothers, but their father died. And then there are 100 Kaurava brothers, and their father was a king. So now the Pandavas are supposed to be king, but then Dhritarashtra wanted his son to be the king. So in this way, the politics continued. And then you tell this, people are very interested to hear about politics. And then they gave them poison. Achha, they died. No, they didn't die. They were sent to Varanavat Lakshagriha. And the whole house was made of lag so that a fire can be put one day. Then what happened? They all were burnt alive? No, 5 people were found in that house burned. Oh, it was the 5 sons only? No, it was someone else. They went underground by the idea given by Vidura. Okay, then what? Then they married Draupadi, isn't it? So, they survived and they married Draupadi. Now, what happened when Dhritarashtra didn't hear about that? Oh, Dhritarashtra cried crocodile tears hearing about the Varanavati incident. But then later on he gave Kandaprastha and Indraprastha came. But then Duryodhana wanted to put a full stop to existence of Pandavas by doing this thing, what do you call it? Dice game. And then after 12 years they didn't give, then the war ensued between them. And that's another very interesting scene for people. What is it? War scene. Bhai bhai mein jagada. In India, whenever there is a fight, no, in road also you will find big crowd will come. Ye kya bol raha? Ye kya bol raha? Ye kya bol raha? Correct. And 2 sides people will pull them and they are trying to catch collar and slap and big crowd will come. Nobody will sort out the problem. They will only watch it. So, when they were interested, abhi kya ho gaya? The shank was blown. Okay, then who hit whom? Nobody hit anybody. Krishna gave Bhagavad Gita. So, in this way, Vedavyas narrated the Mahabharata. And in the Mahabharata, he has also not avoided Bhagavad Gita, for example. He thought that people are going to hear the climax. In the climax point, there is Bhagavad Gita. They have to read it. In this way, I will make them devotees. Like that Vedavyas was thinking. Not only that, he told that before they were driven to the forest, when the Pandavas lost all their kingdom, Draupadi was brought in the middle of the Sabha and she begged for help from all the Kuru elders and nobody gave help. Then Duryodhana told Dushasana to disrobe her. Then what? Yes, Dushasana went to disrobe her. He caught hold of her clothes. Then happened, what happened? Sometimes in a movie, two scenes are very famous. One is a stunt scene, another one is rape scene. Huh? In movies, you have seen that? Huh? So, then Draupadi is going to be disrobed in the public. People may show great interest. At that time, the great fact Vedavyas presented. Who came there? Krishna. Huh? Who always protects his devotees. Krishna came and gave unlimited sari. So, at least some conditioned soul should have little buddhi to understand. Huh? Hare Krishna is coming and supplying unlimited sari to her. Huh? And nobody else, her husbands couldn't protect. Her Kuru elders couldn't protect. But Krishna gave so much. People can think about it. So these two scenes. One is Draupadi's Vastraharan. Another one is the war scene. In both the climax scenes, Vedavyas has presented the most important information. One talks about practical surrender, Saranagati of Draupadi towards Krishna. Another one talks about the Divya Jnana, transcendental knowledge, which is Bhagavad Gita. So in this way, Vedavyas had done his job. Instead of giving only, imagine if only Bhagavad Gita he gave, nobody will open it. But he has given the whole background of Bhagavad Gita by talking about Pandavas, Kauravas. Now some devotee may say, what is all this politics? Wars and politics and fighting. Tell me something about Krishna. Devotees may ask like that. But conditioned souls will ask, you know, keep, you know, Bhagavad Gita aside, tell me some politics. Huh? Tell me. So that is why he mixed both and gave, so that this category of people will, it's like I told you, lollipop and medicine. Like that he gave them together. So, when Vedavyas, although he gave all these things, now the last point about accomplishment and versus dissatisfaction. So, in 26, 27 verses, no satisfaction in spite of such vast compilation for the welfare of all. Although he compiled it, he was still not satisfied. So he was reflecting on the cause of his dissatisfaction. You see, Vedavyas had written the literature in such a way that he had given some kind of allurement to the living entities. You see, in this world, samsara is very painful. Janma, mrtyu, jara, vyadi. But if you take shelter of Vishnu, you can get liberated. Is it a wrong information or a right information? What do you say? It's the right information. You will get liberated. But it is not the ultimate information. See, you get liberated also, but you enter Vaikuntha also, and you render service also. So he is not giving that information. He has been presenting liberation as the ultimate goal. So that, because jivas are more concerned about relieving themselves from the pain than to serve the Lord. So he has given only partial information. But in Gita, Lord Krishna says, Janma Bandha Vinir Mukta Padangachantyanamayam. Two things he is telling. You become free from material bondage and enter into kingdom of God. So Vedavyas did not pay much attention to that kingdom of God entering. He told that the jivas, you can become liberated if you follow this. So this is one thing he had propagated. Another thing was, in order to allure the living entities to take up to religion, just like we do sometimes, if you come for our weekly program, we will give you a free study seminar for you, study tips seminar, time management seminar, all that. We give like that. So, in the same manner, Vedavyas thought that I will write the Puranas with all the demigods, glorifying if you worship this demigod, you will get this benefit. If you worship that demigod, you will get that benefit. All that I will do. So, that also I had written very elaborately. Imagine you zoom only on Brahma, how much you can write. Zoom only on Kartikeya, you can write a lot. So, he had very elaborately explained in the Puranas about the various demigods and the mental benefits one can derive by worshipping them. And this is one thing which is going to distract the living entities too much. This is another thing. Third thing, in Mahabharata, Vedavyas glorifies truthfulness, honesty, you know, these kind of qualities to be very great. So he highlights many of the mundane moral qualities as being very important. Like for example, Karna is a Danavir. So it's so much highlighted in Mahabharata, glorifying him for being Danavir. But the actual point is, you didn't take shelter of Krishna. That should be highlighted. You know, you should show people that are this fellow, despite his being Danavir, he didn't take shelter of Krishna. So similarly, Naladamayanti, they were very virtuous and pious people, but they were not godly. They were not pure devotees. So this kind of glorification in the Vedic literature, where you glorify mundane quality of somebody, that also distracts the living entities, because then the living entities will think that I also want to be like him. They will pursue mundane qualities and they will leave the Supreme Lord aside. So there is one verse, Vede Ramayane Chaiva Purane. Sorry, what is the next line? Purane Bharate Tatha Adye Mant. Adye madye cha ante cha Hari sarvatra giyate. So this verse says, Vedas, Puranas in Bharata, Vede Ramayana chaiva. Vedas, Ramayana, Mahabharata and Puranas and all these things, Hari sarvatra giyate. So before Hari sarvatra giyate is saying, Adye madye antye, which means the beginning, in the middle and in the end, you know, Lord Hari is glorified. But somebody may say, what about the beginning and middle in-between portion? What about the middle and end in-between portion? So sarvatra word is using. Sarvatra giyate. So tomorrow we will see if Hari sarvatra giyate is true with what Vedavyas wrote in all these literatures, then why did he not become satisfied? Why did he become despondent? What was lacking in that? So this question will become more clear in the next chapter tomorrow. Shilpa Parki, thank you very much.